Blog Talk Radio.
Monica Liel, welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, February 11th, 2011. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research, and I am the head moderator of the Bring Forth Forums at bringforth.org. That's bring, the number four, th.org. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 347-884-8770 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 347-884-8770. Or you can join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. And please visit our sponsor, Alan Feibelman, at waternurtureslife.com for information regarding powerful crystalline water. Our bodies are 70% water. What kind of water are you putting in your body? Filtration is only the first step. Learn about crystalline therapeutic-grade water at waternurtureslife.com. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. We will be here every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Carla, I hope you're having a great week. Did you have any brief announcements before we start our show?
Hey, Monica. Just a passing mention of something that'll be fun for us here in Louisville, Kentucky. We're going to have a much bigger group for our public meeting on the 26th than usual because a lot of people are coming in from out of town to sort of wish me well on my way to the operation. And, of course, the other part of that small announcement is that we'll only have two more weeks of these shows before I have to take some time out to have some spinal fusion done to the lower part of my spine. And I don't really know how long it will take me to be able to do the show after that. So probably you can expect a month without us, and I hope you don't forget where we are in that time. I don't know. I have no idea what it's going to be. I'm told it's a rough operation. But the benefits are huge in that it keeps me walking, and supposedly there'll be a tremendous amount of pain lifted off, and that'll be, both of those things will be great. So with the operation happening on the 28th, then you can pretty much write off March, and we'll see, you know, if I'm okay after a month of recovery to come back on the show. Here's hoping. So that's about it for me. We had a lovely week here, and my brother is visiting, so that's a boon for me. I greatly enjoy him. I raised him until the age of 7 when I married. He was born when I was 14, and I stayed home. And went to college here in Louisville, and one of the reasons I wanted to do that was to make sure that he got good care, because at the time my mother was totally dedicated to her career, and she was full-time in school and then also full-time in work. So she wasn't home much. So that was a real pleasure, raising him to the age of 7, and it's actually the only mothering I've ever been able to do on a personal basis. So it was very good for me. I wanted to be a mom. And he called me mom until he was almost 2. He couldn't figure out.
Oh.
But at any rate, he's in town, and that's always a joy.
Well, we will definitely be holding you in our prayers, Carla, for during your surgery and recuperation. I'm sure you're going to have a smooth surgery and a very smooth, wonderful recuperation, and we'll be just really praying for that for you, holding you in the light for that.
And there are so many powerful healers that are interested in Log One. And I mean, the last fusion that I had done, which was back in March 2010, doctor couldn't believe at how well the healing went. He kept saying, "You're such a good healer." And I knew that it was all my friends and all their prayers and thoughts and absent healing and Ricky Baxter sending me energy and all kinds of stuff. So I look forward to it being just exactly like that. It's going to be a lovely spring, and I will bloom like the flowers.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, I'm going to start with our first quote for the evening. This is from the Law of One sessions, session 1014. This is from Ra. Questioner asks, "For the general development of the reader of this book, could you state some of the practices or exercises to perform to produce an acceleration towards the Law of One?" Ra, "I am Ra. Exercise 1. This is the most nearly centered and usable within your illusion complex. The moment contains love. That is the lesson, goal of this illusion or density. The exercise is to consciously see that love in awareness and understanding distortions. The first attempt is the cornerstone. Upon this choosing rests the remainder of the life experience of an entity. The second seeking of love within the moment begins the addition. The third seeking empowers the second, the fourth powering or doubling the third. As with the previous type of empowerment, there will be some loss of power due to flaws within the seeking in the distortion of insincerity. However, the conscious statement of self to self of the desire to seek love is so central an act of will that, as before, the loss of power due to this friction is inconsequential. Exercise 2. The universe is one being. When a mind-body-spirit complex views another mind-body-spirit complex, see the Creator. This is a helpful exercise. Exercise 3. Gaze within a mirror. See the Creator. Exercise 4. Gaze at the creation which lies about the mind-body-spirit complex of each entity. See the Creator. The foundation or prerequisite of these exercises is a predilection towards what may be called meditation, contemplation, or prayer. With this attitude, these exercises can be processed. Without it, the data will not sink down into the roots of the tree of mind, thus enabling and ennobling the body and touching the spirit.
Thank you, Monica. I really love this quote, and when I asked Monica if it was okay with her, she told me that she had it framed on her wall. So I think that it's probably a favorite of a lot of people that are familiar with the Law of One. And it's such a powerful question, you know, how can I accelerate my evolution towards the Law of One? And Ra says, well, the moment contains love. The exercise is to consciously see that love. On this choosing to see that love rests the remainder of the life experience. In other words, this is how you start creating your own universe, your own creation. And as you continue seeking love, your polarity doubles and doubles again and doubles again. Exercise 2, when you see a person, see the Creator. Exercise 3, look at a mirror and see the Creator. Exercise 4, look at the creation all around us and see the Creator. And then it gives you the kicker that you hear so often from the Confederation entities. The foundation is a predilection toward what may be called meditation. In other words, you have to enter the silence. You can do it with prayer, you can do it with contemplation, you can do it with meditation, you can walk in nature. There are lots of ways to go into the silence. Some of them can be simple as sitting in a chair in a doctor's office and instead of reading a magazine, entering the silence and tabernacling with the Creator. But just to be able to have that consciousness every moment. Where's the love in this moment? It's a really legitimate question at any time, in any circumstance. And sometimes it helps you with strategy to think that, because if you ask that question of yourself and earnestly looking creatively, looking with an open mind at the situation, you may see no love out there. You may see a bunch of people invested in outcomes and battling and not expressing love at all. So guess who needs to put the love into that moment? That would be you. And you can do that, you see, if you've got a heads up and you've got this good advice, you know, see the creator. Look into that person's eyes that's causing all of this turmoil and see the creator, because that is a level that is true of that person, and it's actually truer than his behavior at the moment. So it really helps to remember that the moment contains love. See that love in people, in yourself, and in the world around you. And look for it if you don't find it. And if you don't find it, supply it. Let the love that is flowing through you at all times enter that situation. Let your eyes be eyes of love. Let your heart be soft with understanding. And you'll make a big difference, not only for other people, but in your own self-perception. You will begin to create a universe of love that you live in, and it will be true for you. And it's a heaven on earth when you can live like that. So, good to share that with you. So, Monica, what's our first question?
Our first question was submitted from Bring Forth, that's Bring4TH, that's the number for bringforth.org, and we'd like to invite everyone to check that out, by the way. Wonderful community dedicated to the study of the Law of One. First question is from Kyle, and Kyle says, "Hi, Monica and Carla. I see in the second talk at the 2010 Homecoming on free will and love, you mentioned the state you've been in where you move into the light and are the light, or a witness. You mentioned that there was one such time where this experience continued for 3 days. I refer to this because I imagine that the 3 days afforded you the opportunity to experience an almost full range of daily life in this state. I have several questions regarding this. Number one, what do you see, feel, think that is different? Two, what specific insights have you gleaned about life, catalyst, etc.? Three, what is your experience of things that you would normally see or think of as upsetting, catalytic, negative? And four, what do you see in other individuals in this state? What do you think and feel about people's bad actions? Also, I've read the story from Hatan on the boy who came to see with the eyes of love from the coloring book. In your mystical experience, would you say that this is what you experience, seeing with the eyes of love? Thank you so much to both of you for providing this Q&A service." And Carla, that was several questions, so if you need me to reiterate those, just let me know.
Okay. Well, I'll see what I can do. First of all, he wanted to know about the times that I just go into mystical states. I have no control over it. It can happen while talking to you on the radio. It can happen any time. The time that it happened for 3 days running was a time where I was much less than I am now, even though I'm facing a major surgery. Knock wood, my organs are in good shape, and they weren't then. And I was about to have an operation that would take out half my transverse colon. I didn't know it at the time. All I knew was that I was in a terrible well of pain. And it didn't help that not only did my tummy hurt, but also the arthritis was just fierce at that time. And worse than it is now, I went through rehab and I learned pain management in 92. So I experienced those 3 days in bliss while I was in such a well of pain that I could barely think. I couldn't stand the light. I had to have something over my eyes. I had to have something over my ears. And even then, I was listening to NPR because I couldn't move. I was absolutely in bed, just very, very ill. And I was listening to NPR, and I had my husband turn it on and just turn it on, not turn up the volume at all, and I could hear it fine. Now, my hearing is usually pretty bad, so it was an unusually keen state for me in terms of pain. So it was an unusual situation, and I think that was the reason that I was there for 3 days. I probably needed to be there. I don't know, but it was an incredible experience. It's hard to give anything quantitative about it. I didn't see or feel or think anything in that state. It was a state of being, not thinking. And I was very happy to rest there. And I just remember the absolute peace and the absolute tranquility of that state. The insights that I have gleaned about life from being in these mystical states is hard to put your finger on, because if there's one thing I found to be true, it's that you can't share these states with people. You can tell people about them and make them feel that this sort of thing is possible because they believe you. But as far as bringing anything back to share with others, other than the bare possibility that that you can be in states like this where you are the light or where you are a witness to the light, it's not content rich. It's a state of spiritual mind. It's a state of consciousness. It's not a state of the intellect. There are no thoughts associated with it. There's no, oh, now I see. It's a state in which you are absolutely aware and know in a Gnostic way that all is well and all will be well, that the universe is perfectly designed. My experience of things that I would normally see or think of as upsetting or catalytic or negative, well, I still see things like that as upsetting, catalytic, and negative. I am capable, however, of toggling up to see things from another point of view that's broader. And so I don't discount the eyes of judgment that I have looking out upon the world. I think we all need discrimination and discernment when it comes to living our lives and performing our honor duties and doing the things that we do. We need to be able to estimate and judge what we're looking at. But we also need to see that it's okay, that people are more than their behavior, and so are we, and that situations are more than their bare bones. And the eyes of love are powerful to see hope and the possibilities of faithful living and the possibilities for change and mediation and conversation and entente. What do you see in other individuals in this state? Well, you see other individuals precisely as you normally see them, but you are heavily overlaid with the awareness that you are looking at the Creator, that this person is quite perfect and that you love this person. What I think and feel about people's bad actions is what everybody thinks about people's bad actions. It's very distressing. There's no question about that. But on the other hand, they are not simply their behavior. We have a large prison population among our seekers. And we even have a newsletter that's written by the prisoners for the prisoners called The Loop, Law of One Prisoners. And anybody can subscribe to it. All you have to do is go to Bring Forth and click the subscribe button, but you can't put anything in it. You can just be aware of what the prisoners are saying to other prisoners. The reason that this came about was that we found out that prisoners can't write prisoners. We were going to try to get these wonderful Law of One fans together, and we couldn't do it because it's usually, in most states, it's illegal for a prisoner to write another prisoner. I guess it's so that they can't plan heists or something, but it's quite irritating when you're just trying to do something like put good people together. But that was not to be, so we created the idea of a newsletter, and one of our volunteers, Lorena, does a beautiful job at corresponding with prisoners and creating this newsletter. So we try very hard to see that people are far more than their behavior. There are prisoners that are absolutely rotten people, and they are looking to take advantage of you, and they are very service to self-oriented. I'm not saying there aren't. What I am saying is that you can commit a crime in one filthy heartbeat, one rotten impulse that you've had, you know, you're angry, passionate, whatever. It doesn't necessarily have to be the work of a confirmed criminal. It can still land you in jail. And there you are, and you're trying to get on with your life and, under admittedly somewhat straitened circumstances. And where do you go with that? What tack can you take? So we have always had this policy, and it's supported by those who donate for this purpose, but we always have had a free book policy where a prisoner can write in, request a book, and get it. And once they're finished with that, they can request another and just keep on until they've read everything we've got. So I certainly would not want to have a world in which the people that acted badly did not have any constraints upon them and basically took over, because it would sully everyone's life to be bullied and pushed around like that. But I do feel that people's actions are not the people. The people themselves are all part of the Creator. And it's really important to remember that, because otherwise you divide the world into the good guys and the bad guys. And we'll never form one world. We'll never form a social memory complex. We'll never get to the place of unity that matches the truth in our hearts by thinking, well, I like most people, but I just have to judge some people because of their behavior. It's much better to see with those eyes of love. The question about Hatton and the coloring book, What is Love? It's really a lovely little channeling, and it occurred in 1975 when Tom Flaherty brought his son, Mike, to the meditation. He wanted to experience a meditation, and he asked a question. He said, "What is love?" And Hatton channeled an answer to him, which, when I read it, typing the transcript, I just thought, this is going to make a great coloring book. So I knew a woman who illustrated textbooks and made cartoon instruction things for grade school kids, and I thought, I'll get her to draw it. And she did, and she did a beautiful job. So we put that coloring book out, and it talks about this little boy sailing over the rainbow bridge in a beautiful boat and landing on this sandy shore and seeing an old man who looked at him with eyes of love. And when he looked into the man's eyes, he knew what love was. And I would love to say that I see with eyes of love all the time. I try. I succeed some of the time. I'm too much of a bozo to have a really good score there. But, you know, it's useless to keep score. You just have to pick yourself up when you fall down and say, oh, well, brush yourself off and, you know, give it another whack. Because that's all you can do is start over. and not judge yourself, because if you get into self-judgment, then you'll never get far. Let's see. I think I covered anything.
I think you did.
Okay.
It's amazing. You remembered all those. Okay, we're going to move on to the next question from Miri. Dear Carla, I have a question regarding 4D. Does duality still exist in fourth density, or will we have oneness once we ascend to 4D? Best regards for your surgery and love, light, from Miri.
Oh, thank you, Miri. That's very kind of you. Well, it's sort of yes and no. Duality does exist in fourth density, but it's split. People that are on the service to others' path work in fourth density with others who are on the service to others' path. And those who have wanted to pursue the service to self path are in fourth density negative. So you've got two fourth densities. You've got a split path. That's why it's so important to make this choice of service to others or service to self. You know, you make the first choice, see love in this moment, treat other people like yourself, you know, do the right thing. And then you do it again, and then you do it again. At each choice point, you choose love. And you build up polarity so that when it's time to walk the steps of light, you're used to handling a good density of light, and you walk right into fourth density, very comfortable to you, and so there you are. If you don't do that, you could be in third grade forever, and, you know, people say, well, what's the rush? We have forever. Well, we may have forever, but do you want to linger forever in the somewhat squalid, littered alleys of the density of choice when you could be in a world where there is so much more light, so much more awareness, so much more understanding, so much more knowledge? There's no veil in fourth density. You understand so much more just on the get-go before you've ever learned anything new. So I think that if people would just think about it from the standpoint of, why does somebody want to graduate third grade in school and get on to fourth grade? Well, you know, give me another teacher. Give me some new lessons. Let's have a little shakeup around here. I'm ready. I'm certainly ready. And since this is my last incarnation on planet Earth, I better be.
As a follow-up to that, since the STS 4D negative will be in their own 4D negative reality, and being that the criteria to go 4D positive is 51% STO, then would you say maybe that extra, the remaining 49% or whatever it may be with each entity, would that bit of negativity that might still be in a lot of those entities be what provides the duality in terms of any remaining catalyst in 4D?
Well, yeah, I think that you don't just turn into a perfect person when you become a fourth density person. You just are in a different environment where not only your own negativity, but everybody else's negativity is very plain. It's as easy to see as your own thoughts. And there's no fooling yourself. There's no fooling yourself about yourself. There's no fooling yourself about other people. So you're just dealing with a better deck as far as dealing with refining that mind, body, and spirit that go into a person. And you're taking all of fourth density, all of fifth density to explore and to refine the ore of self, where you're just basically digging up all your treasure and honoring that and letting everything else go as you lose the need to feel certain things fall away from you. So yes, there will definitely be us dealing with our very human minds and bodies and spirits. in fourth density, but it'll be in a much more improved environment, which is conducive to refining the ore of self.
Okay, to our listeners, I'd like to remind everyone that we love hearing from you. If you'd like to call us live, please call 347-884-8770. That's 347-884-8770. Be sure to press the 1 key when prompted, and you can join the show. Our next question is related. This is from Vlado. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. And it's really a three-part question. So I'm going to do the first two parts, which are related to 4D, and then after you answer that, I'll go back to the first part, okay? The first two-part question is, I'm interested in your view about incarnations after 2012. Will people be allowed to incarnate here who are third density or only fourth density people? And after 2012, Earth should be 4D. Will people with negative orientation from Orion still be here using these several hundred years, or will it just be a very heated environment for them? I'll leave it at that, and then there's another part to that, but it's a little bit long.
Okay. My view about incarnations after 2012 is that it's not that people will be allowed or not allowed to incarnate here, but people that want to work for density life won't be attracted to coming here. I do think that people will be coming here for some time, and that is because of the adhering karma that so many earthlings in third density had, either on Mars or on Maldek or on Deneb or even in Atlantis, which is on our own planet. But these are all people that their societies chose to act in such a way that their environment became uninhabitable by humans. So they had to leave those native planets and find another third density planet where they could learn the lessons of the choice. And so we have like 16 different planetary populations here that are trying to finish third density. So it's a crowded little planet, and it has a lot of people here with that adhering karma. So I think that we have reproduced on this planet what the same kind of depredations that our people made on other planets before they came here. And when they graduate from third density and they're reviewing their incarnation and they're deciding what to do in their first incarnation after graduation from here, they think to themselves, you know what I'd really like to do, what I'd really like to do to serve is to come back to planet Earth and see if I can make some restitution to the Earth, to the air, to the water, to the planet, to Mother Earth, to Gaia. And so I think we have a lot of crystal or indigo children, two of the terms I've heard the most, describing kids that come in. They're fitted for third density life, but they also have fourth density DNA, and so they can handle the light of fourth density that is so strongly interpenetrating third density now. And I think that we'll probably see some people making restitution to the earth, healing the earth for a few hundred years after 2012. But it's just that when people pass from that their current incarnation on Earth, they will not be coming back to Earth. They will either be going on to fourth density positive or fourth density negative, or they will be repeating third density on another planet. There's no way to repeat third density here because third density light is exhausted. So I think there may still be people here for several hundred years, but there won't be any advantage for Orion entities to come messing around here because there will be too thin a veil on the population that is still here, because they'll be fourth density aware and or fourth density active. So they won't be fooled nearly as easily as we somewhat naive human beings of third density have been. The temptations of empire will not seem fair to them. I think that we're pretty safe. We're going to see a few more thrashes of the dragon's tail here, but they've basically already lost, according to readings in the past 10 years or so. It's all saying the time of negativity is basically done. There's a lot of violent thrashing around as people try for that last advantage, but they have not won. The light has remained firm in spite of all the darkness, and it's just not going to happen the way the space pirates, as the Kuo group called them, want to happen. The time lateral will disappear. I think it's already disappearing, and everything will be back on track.
Okay, this is part two to that question from Vlado. Ra told us that third density will soon wind down in the next 400 to 700 years. Maybe Kuo stated recently a bit different numbers, but something like that. Also, third density light is waning, and after 2012, there won't be much of that. Maybe if someone is 45% nearing graduation now, would it be possible for him to achieve this additional 5% after 2012, when he will have, say, 50 years ahead of him still? And what if someone understands in 2020, when there will be more information available, that this life is for polarization, and he will start or continue working on balancing and maybe even become adept, or will be able to contact infinity? There was stated that an adept who is able to contact infinity through the gate, he can choose to leave third density. Does this apply to in after 2012? I know that Ra Kuo didn't want to infringe and leave all things a bit open, but what is your personal view on this issue?
Well, I think that it's perfectly possible for a third density human like us to continue to polarize after 2012, and it's possible for somebody to wake up after 2012 and choose to polarize. The problem is not that the third density light is gone and therefore there's no light. The problem is that the light that is interpenetrating third density is powerfully informative. It's much more difficult to hide the truth about yourself from yourself. And what happens is people just defensively, automatically, instinctively do a lot of projecting when they start seeing the truth about themselves. And they are seeing all the bad things about people, but they're seeing them in other people. And so what needs to happen for people is to realize, okay, anytime that I'm irritated, anytime that I have I'm pulled off my center and my energy body's closing up because of unhappiness or, you know, some negative emotion, I have to realize it's not out there. That's a hall of mirrors out there. Everybody besides me is a mirror for me, because we are all one. And so we are all the universal human being. And whatever we see in other people is that part of ourselves that we are not completely okay with. And so to use this hall of mirrors well, it's necessary simply to find that part of yourself that irritates you about the other person, and then work to heal that in yourself, work to find it, to accept it, to come to love it, and to task it with working for the light. Because something like greed or anger can be the grit in your system that enables you to persist and persevere when things don't seem to be going well but you want to serve, and so you're determined to hold the high road. Those negative, seemingly negative aspects are also what gives you your backbone and your nerve. So those aren't to be scorned. They're simply to be redeemed and told, okay, I've got work for you to do for the light. So it's perfectly possible to do the work after 2012. It's just not going to be as easy because you can't open yourself to the truth little by little. It keeps hitting you with full force, kind of, as we say in these parts, upside the head. And you're dazed and you're sort of reeling and you're going, what's happening? And, you know, the only thing that's happening is you know too much truth. And you haven't been able to seed it yet. So the answer is always do more inner work. Spend more time in the silence. Get yourself back to the vibration and frequency of love. It's within all of us. It's a matter of coming into your heart and allowing that to flower and to blossom within us. Definitely. It's possible for someone to finish polarizing. It's possible for someone to choose and go through the whole program in fourth density light. It's just going to be tougher.
Okay, and the last part from Vlado, I see close around me people who may be wanderers too. I see their blockages, and I don't want to infringe or cause confusion to them. I slowly give them hints and pieces. I see people with some blockages, and I wish for them only the best. On the one hand, I wish they could pass graduation, but on the other hand, I do not want them to be exposed to too much confusion. It just takes time. And this is what my question is about. How much of that we have can we give to people to guide and help them?
Well, Vlado, you can't give a thing to people. Here's what you do. You assume that they're fine. You said that. You wish them the best. But you're judging them. You can't help judging them, I know. And it's okay. But you either see with eyes of judgment or you see with eyes of love. So you assume, at least I assume, that everybody is on a timer, that their alarm is set, and maybe it's not even set for this incarnation. You know, maybe they're going to have to spend another 75, 76,000 years in another third density somewhere. If that's what they need, then more power to them. It is an infringement on free will to try to help somebody for their own good. You do not want to proselytize. Free will is the first principle of the Law of One, before anything else, before love. So you have to respect the free will in other people. That gives them the right to be as ignorant and sleepy and sleepwalking through life as they are. What you do is this. You think of yourself as Johnny Appleseed. Now, you don't come from this culture. At least your name, Vlad, is Russian or, you know, Slavic. So I'm assuming that English is your second language, and you may not know the story of Johnny Appleseed. So here it is. Johnny Appleseed was a guy that used to love apples, and he was a hobo, and he walked around all of America, and he ate apples. He loved apples. He was always eating an apple. He tossed the core over his shoulder. And everywhere that he walked, he planted apple trees this way. And so all the apple trees in America, and there are millions and millions of them, come from Johnny Appleseed. That's the way the story goes. So just think of yourself as a Johnny Appleseed of the information that you know and love. And as you are eating this information for yourself, toss the core over your shoulder. You know, toss a thought over your shoulder in passing. Not making it happen, but whenever you see an opportunity, you can just make a statement or say something that intrigues people and then drop it. Do not look behind you to see if those apple seeds are taking root. Just keep walking. And occasionally you're going to run across somebody that begins to ask you questions. And then you can tell them anything that you feel that you know, anything that you think is important. That's fine, because they've asked you. But respect people's free will, and don't worry about them. A lot of times, what's in people's hearts is hidden from the world, and they may be in a far different vibration than you think. But at any rate, it isn't your concern. Your concern as a spiritual being is to help if you can, encourage when you can see the way to do that, admire, support, that kind of, I guess, maternal or paternal, parental concern for people. Let that be your guide. Just love people. That's what we're here to do. Love them. And if you can share some of what you know, by all means do. But if there's no easy way, if there's no path given to you to share what you know, don't worry about it. Don't relate on the basis of what you know. Relate on the basis of who you are and how you see them. Because your seeing them as the creator will ennoble them. And they will like being with you because you see them differently than other people. And that is going to help them more than any single thing that you could tell them. So let your beingness, let your essence do it for you. Let them see love in you. Not because you have it, but because you are willing to step aside and let the Creator look out through your eyes.
Okay. Our next question is from Nilvio. Nilvio asks, how can the human beings living on the Earth's surface progress without the integration of the inner Earth civilizations? Are we not dancing in circles until we integrate them into our processes? How can we surface humans have oneness without having the inner Earth civilizations with us?
Okay. Hey, Nilvio. I think you're the same Nilvio that has visited here in Louisville, and I send you my best love. I so enjoyed sharing energy with you when you were here. It's been probably 20 years since Nilvio's been here, but I remember him with great fondness. He's a doctor, and he has the greatest of high hopes for serving humanity. He's just a good, good person. Good to reach out and touch you, Nilvio. Okay, first of all, the inner Earth civilizations, I believe, do exist. But there's a huge amount of myth about them. So one never has the feeling of being able to do research to the extent that you really know what's going on with the inner world. We've been told in readings that the Earth is honeycombed, and that and the Ra group said that there were lots of people originally in the honeycombed under Earth of caves and so forth. And they brought themselves up to third density speed and were able to get out of the underworld and were able to live as human beings. But I've seen the research, I've done the research, and it's very intriguing. It really does seem as though there is a whole lot more to this Earth than just the surface, as far as the human population. However, there are lots of people in Europe that we will never see, and I'm not worried, are you, about integrating them into our processes? The honeycomb part of the interior of the Earth is all one with us. There's no separation. So I don't think we're dancing in circles. I think that we're dancing together. And since it's a spiritual dance, it doesn't have to be a physical one. You don't have to have everybody together. You simply need to be inclusive as you do your dance. I hope that answers you, Nilvio.
Okay, Carla, we have just about 5 minutes left, so I think we have time for one more quick question. This is from Terry. And Terry asks, what do you think Jesus would say about 2012?
Well, you know, Jesus was a fan of the theory that the rapture is going to happen all in one big moment. He was telling people that it was going to happen before some of these people died. And this was, you know, 2,000 years ago. So obviously he wasn't really clued in as to the time, but he was receiving impressions that there was going to be a shift in consciousness and we needed to start loving each other. We needed to love our neighbors as ourselves. That's a service to others path in a nutshell. So Jesus would say, it's all going to happen at once and you should get ready for it by loving the Lord your God with all your mind, all your soul, all your strength, and your neighbor as yourself. And then Jesus went on to say, on these two principles hang all the law and the prophets. In other words, all of the Old Testament. So he replaced all of that law, the kosher laws, Mosaic laws, and so forth, with two commandments. Love the Lord your God. Love your neighbor as yourself. I believe he would say that, and then he would tell you that he sends a comforter that will be with us until the end of the age. And that comforter he called the Holy Spirit. The Ra group would call it the higher self. So we have help. We have every hope of being ready for 2012 if we can just see with the eyes with which Jesus saw all of those whom he met.
We have just a few minutes left, Carla. I'm not sure that there's enough time to ask the remaining questions I have are a little bit complex for 5 minutes. So did you have any last parting thoughts that you'd like to address? Oh, you know what? Here is a question that... Okay. I'll tell you what. Here's a question. I'm going to ask it, but if you think it's too complex and we can keep it till next week, then we can do that. It has to do with sex, and... This is from D, and D asks, how does sexual energy affect the human body when the human is masturbating? In some of the Oriental religions, such behavior is not allowed since it would cause negative effects in the mind, body, and soul. What is your opinion on this issue? And, you know, we have up to about 8 minutes, really, we could. So if you want to tackle that one.
I'll just see how it takes me.
Okay.
A simple question because of the fact that sexual energy is sexual energy red ray or orange ray or yellow ray or, you know, I mean, it goes right through the chakras. It just depends on what level of sexual energy we're talking about. I think when most people are masturbating, they're just tense and wanting to relax. I don't have a lot of experience at masturbating. I think it's a little easier for guys, and it's on their minds more. It's just the way men are made. And thank God for the, you know, human race that men are made that way, because it is that the male role that does the reaching and the female role that awaits the reaching. So I don't know from personal experience much about masturbation, although there were times in my 30s that I thought, I just can't sleep unless I do something about this. I was hand-fasted to Don Elkins, who really wanted a celibate lifestyle. So I had all the deprivation necessary to create that kind of feeling in me. And when I was younger, I think it was closer to the surface. I did not find it anything but a release of tension. You know, once I got into a situation where I had a more, shall we say, normal third density existence with an active sex life with my husband after 1987, and also where I could garden, I could cook, I could do various things that would relax me other than masturbate. it never came up again, let's put it that way. And I don't mean to make puns, but when you're talking about sex, all you can do is make puns. It just seems like you can't get away from it. So pardon me in advance. I don't think that there's anything negative about it as such. I think it's a neutral act unless you're imagining sexual acts that are deviant that could cause pain and suffering if you did them in real life. So I understand the fastidiousness that would say, oh, well, you really shouldn't masturbate. But in actuality, for some people who are alone, it's really the most sensible thing to do, to take. I mean, it's like saying, well, you should never sneeze because you're not married. Sneezing is a natural function. It's not a pretty function. It's one where one tries to hide what one is doing. You know, cover the mouth with a hand and so forth. But when you got to sneeze, you got to sneeze. And I think that if you don't masturbate and you're a guy, you're eventually going to wind up with an ejaculation during a dream, say. And I don't think that that has any attractiveness to it compared to the act of taking care of it yourself. So I think it's a very neutral act. It's an act that says, okay, you got to sneeze, so sneeze. But if you're talking about the energy affecting the human body when you're masturbating, it only affects it at red ray. Because you're not dealing with another person. There's no relationship involved. So it's a good way to keep yourself from ever getting into a situation where not only have you found a way to satisfy your sexual desires with another person, you've also found a person to serve, you found a person to work with in raising children, you found a person to work with as you build your spiritual life. I can't tell you all the advantages I have found from being married to my wonderful and beautiful husband, because we are able to do morning offering together, we do the Gaia meditation together every day, we work with the archetypes, we say the Lord's Prayer when we get up and when we go to bed. We share all of these moments of worship together, and it makes it better for both of us. So there are so many reasons to be unsatisfied with that solution of masturbation and be unsatisfied with the limitations of red ray sexual energy. And, you know, seek higher. Seek to find a companion that is good in your body and in your mind and in your spirit as far as being a companion to you and being someone whom you can serve for the rest of your life. It really is a beautiful plan. And I've always said that marriage is the fast track spiritually. Monica, I'm going to have to give this back to you because we're running out of time.
We sure are. Okay, thank you, Carla, so much.
Take a question.
You have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert, and I'm your host, Monica Liel. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our two websites, llresearch.org, which is LL Research's archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4th.org, LL Research's community website, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. Thanks so much for listening in, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you have a question for the next show, please visit the Bring Forth forums at bringforth.org, navigate to the miscellaneous section, and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert submitting questions. Or you can submit a private question to me at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K-A-L, moons@gmail.com. Please be sure to visit our sponsor, Alan Feibelman, at waternurtureslife.com for information regarding powerful crystalline water. Filtration is only the first step. Learn about crystalline therapeutic grade water at waternurtureslife.com. Have a wonderful week. Remember, we just have two more Fridays, and then Carla will be having surgery, so we will be taking at least a couple of weeks, maybe all of March off. So please be sure and tune in when you can, and have a wonderful week.